Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Megillah Daf Yud Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin our shiur 13 lines from the top. It might be easier to find the third of the wide lines at the end of the line. You will notice that we continue with the marking system that we started already before, the double underline, which highlights the psukim of the Megillah that are being darshened. So we continue now with Pasuk Gimel from Perek Aleph of the Megillah. It says, Chel poras umodai hapartamim. Uksiv, in Perek Yud, Pasuk Beis, lemalche modai uporas. What we want to focus on right now is the proximity of the office. We have Partamim versus Melech. Partamim is a Melech, of course, is a king, and Partamim is a type of official, a very high official, but underneath the king. So if you see the proximity of the nation next to the office, in the first pasuk, you see Partamim is next to Modai, and in the second pasuk, Modai is next to Malchi. So what we want to understand is, why is there this change? Why in one pasuk is Modai associated with Partamim, and in the second pasuk it's associated with Melochim, with kings? Omar Rava. So Rava explains, these two nations, Modai and Poras, they actually had warred against Bovel. They succeeded Bovel. They succeeded Babylonia. There was this transition in world power from the Babylonian Empire to the Persian Empire. Now, alongside the Persians, you have the Modai, the Medes. Omar Rava. Rava tells us, Asnuye Asnu Bahadodi. These two nations had made a deal with one another, made Tanai, generally speaking, is a condition, but they made the following agreement. E minon malchi, minaychu afarchi. If from us will be the king, so then you will be the afarchi, the second in command. The e minaychu malchi, and if from you are the king, so minon afarchi, then we will be the second in command. So there was a type of agreement and coexistence between these two nations, and that explains why the change in proximity of office to the nation cited. We continue with the opening psukim of Megillas Esther, where, as everyone will recall, Ahasuerus sets up a gala feast lasting half a year, basically 180 days, and all kinds of all the different nations that he rules over were invited. And we continue with the episode involving the scenario whereby he demonstrates all of his wealth. It says in Pasuk Dalet, Bahar Oisoi es Oisher Kavoid Malchusoi, V'es Yikar Tiferes Gedulosoi. He demonstrated, he showed his the wealth and honor of his kingdom. V'omar Rav Yossi Bar Chanina Melamed. This teaches us Shelovash Bigdei Kehuna, that he wore the Bigdei Kohen Godol. Just to keep things in proper historical perspective, the Babylonians had destroyed the Beis HaMikdash under the leadership of Nebuchadnezzar. Succeeding Nebuchadnezzar, there was Belshazzar, and then that was basically at the end of the Babylonian kingdom. We're saying things in an approximate fashion. One has to check these things out for greater accuracy. But what we want to say is that succeeding the destroyers of the Beis HaMikdash, there were more Babylonian rulers, and then the Persians take over, so that when the Persians took over and when they defeated Bavel, they also collected all the booty from Bavel, including the vessels and the other articles of the Beis HaMikdash that Bavel had captured. So it comes as no surprise that Ahasuerus had in his treasury the Bigdei Kohen Gadol. And how do we know that from the Psukim? Ksiv Hacha, in the Pasuk that we just read from Esther, it says, Yikar Teferes Gedulaso. We dashed and underlined the word Teferes. Ksiv Hasam, it says in the context of the Bigdei Kohuna, Lechavoid Ulesephores. So the word Teferes is an allusion to the Bigdei Kohen. Uvimolois Hayomim Ho'ele. This is after the feast that he made for the distant countries, those that were far away, those that were outside his immediate environs. So it says in Pasuk Hey, with the completion of those days, Uvimolos Hayomim Ho'ele, Osa Hamelech L'chol Ha'omanim Tzim B'Shushan Habira. He made for all of the local folks, the people that were in Shushan, which was the capital city, he made a feast for 7 days. So now what the Gemara does is analyzes from a political standpoint, was this wise? In other words, to cater to the distant nations, and then only at the end to ingratiate yourself with the local, with the nearby, the local folks. Rav Shmuel argue, Chad Omar Melech Pikei Achaya. One says that he was wise in this, Uvechad Omar Melech Tipei Shoya, that he was foolish in this. Mad Omar Melech Pikei Achaya, Shapir Ovid. He says that he was wise in this, he did well. Dekor of Rechika Bereisha. First, he ingratiated himself with those that were far away. He wanted to make sure that he got in good with those that were far away, to align himself with them. Dibenei Mose, the people in his own community, in his own locality, Mechav Kaifilei. They are under his immediate subjugation. Call Amos the boy Behu Mikrav. Whenever he needs to draw them near, he's capable of doing it. He doesn't have to worry about those that are under his immediate thumb, so to speak. So it was more important for him to first make sure that he closed ranks with those that were far away. Umandomar Tipesh Hoya, the other approach, says that was foolish. He should have ingratiated himself with the people of his town, of his immediate locality first. Because in the event that those that are far away will rebel, he has the security of those that are nearby. See, first, according to this approach, the wise thing is to first make sure that you have a strong local base so that you have protection in the event that there is some type of rebellion that takes place at the distance. We have a topic heading here, Mipnei Ma, the no say that is right on the side of the Gemara, Mipnei Ma Nishaibu Yisrael Shiba'isa Dor. We're talking here about the fact that the Jews, when Haman rose to power, they were basically subject to a national genocide, to total destruction. What was it that brought the Jews to this, to the brink of disaster? And the question, you can see, we have here a long marking. Basically, there's a question and a response, but it's one long point. And that's why we call this a nekuda, long. Nun is the nekuda, one long point. Shalu Talmid of Reb Shimon bar Yochai. The students asked Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, Mitnei ma nischaivu sonenem shi Yisrael shiboisa hador kliya. Why were the Jewish people? Now, the expression Sonem Shisrael is a euphemism. Literally, it's the enemies of Israel, but it means the Jewish people. Why were they chayev Kliya. Kliya means destruction, finishing off, like the expression by Yechulu Hashemai Vorets in the story of creation, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu completed his creation. So Kliya means the destruction or the elimination of the Jewish people. Why did they reach that point? Omar Lohem Imruatem. So Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says, why don't you say the answer? Omrulo, so they said, because they benefited and enjoyed the feast of Achashverosh, of the wicked one, Achashverosh. Omar Lahem in Cain, well, if that was the reason, Shebeshushan Yehargu, Shebecholam Kulo Al Yehargu, those that were in Shushan, that enjoyed the feast, and the feast was quite problematic in the sense that later we will learn that he used the feast as an opportunity to disparage the Beis Hamikdash by featuring, as we saw already, he was wearing the Bigdei Kohen Gadol. He used the vessels of the Beis Hamikdash during the feast, very much belittling those holy vessels. So it's one thing to be part of the feast, it's another thing to be there and enjoy that. So okay, that's reason for a big punishment. However, what about all the Jews scattered around the world? Why should they be subject to this? Omru lo, so the students said back to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Emor ato. So then you say, Omar lohem, nei shishtachavu letzelem, because in the time of Nebuchadnezzar, which was, as we said, a while before, it's a number of years before, one would have to calculate how many years before, it was 30 years before, 50 years before, but it's a number of years before, the Jewish people bowed to the Tzelem. The Tzelem was, we'll say, literally it's a statue, and they bow to that statue, and that indicates some form of what's called major sin. There's a debate amongst the Mefarshim. Does that mean that they were worshipping idolatry, or was it something else? But nevertheless, that bowing in the time of Nebuchadnezzar was reason for national destruction. Omru lo, so if that's the answer, the student said, V'chimasu ponim yesh b'davar, is there favoritism? Is there what that means is if they deserve destruction, so be it. Why were they zoche? Why did they merit having a miracle done for them? The whole Purim story was a major miracle. Why were they zoche to that? Omar lohem, heim lo osu elo lifnim. The bowing of the Jews in the time of Nebuchadnezzar was only out of fear. Af HaKadosh Baruch Hu lo osu imoyem elo lifnim. So to the whole story of Purim, with Haman's rising to power and the threat of their destruction, was only that. It was a threat. It was only to create fear. But it wasn't actual. V'hainu dichtiv, ki lo onom milibo. And that's what the Pasuk indicates, that it was not something that he had a true internal intent to destroy. The Pasuk says, in Pasuk Hey, Bachatzar Ginas Bisan Hamelech, Rav Ushmuel. Again, we have Rav and Shmuel arguing. Chan Omar Haroi Lechotzer, Lechotzer Haroi Legino Legino Haroi Lebiton Lebiton. In this pasuk, there are several locations that are mentioned. There's a courtyard, there's a garden, and there is the castle. So, according to one approach, it's that all the people that were assembled, there were people of different rank. And hence, those that were fit to be placed in the courtyard feasted over there, those in the garden there, and those that were fit to be in the palace itself, so they were there. The Chad Omar, and the other approach to this pasuk that indicates three different locations, says, Hoshivan b'chotzer v'lo hechzikosan. He had seated them in the chotzer, in the courtyard, but it wasn't large enough. Begino v'lo hechzikosan, and then he opened up the doors of the garden, and that wasn't enough. Ad shechlisan lebisan v'hechzikosan, until he opened up the palace itself to continue the feast there, and that held them. b'masnisa tana, hoshivan b'chotzer. Another approach is that he sat them in the courtyard. Upasach lohem shnei psachim, and he opened two entranceways from the chotzer, from the courtyard, echod legino ve'echod lebisan, and one leading to the gino, to the garden, and the other to the palace. So we have, as far as explaining this pasuk, we have three approaches. Pasuk vav, chur karpasu secheles, my chur. These are different materials, different fabrics that were used at the feast. So what does chur mean? Rav Omar, and again you see Rav and Shmuel argue about this. Rav Omar, chori chori. It's a type of needlework that the fabric has a lot of holes in it. So it's, one has to appreciate different kinds of fabrics, but it was needlework with holes in it. And Shmuel Omar, milas levona hitzia lahem. Chor is, instead of the word chor, which Rav had explained, chor meaning holes, chor can mean chivar. Chivar means white. So milas levona hitzia lahem, and he spread out for them white milas, it's a type of material, maybe it's a reference to silk, white silks. But the word from the pasuk, chur, is associated with chivar, something that's white. Karpas, Omar of Yossi Bar Chanina, korim shel pasim. Korim are translated often as pillows. You see the word korim together with ksosos, pillows and mattresses. So this was korim of pasim. You find this word pasim, by the way, in Bracious Perek Lamed Zayin Posse Gimel, with Yankiv making for Yosef a ksoinis pasim. And the Meforshim on the Chumash suggests different explanations. Rashi says milas, which is like we saw just before with the word chur. It has to do with a type of fabric. Milas may be silk. Another explanation that one can find in the Meforshim is multicolored, and other translations exist as well. But for our purposes, we see karpas as some type of pillows or mattresses that we call shel pasim. Pasuk Vov says, Al glile kesef v'amude sheish, mitois zohov v'chesef. Tanya. The Brisa here explains the pasuk that says, mitois zohov v'sheish, says Omer, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Haroi lekesef kesef, he who was of a certain rank, of a minister, an official that was fit to be placed on a silver type bed, so he was there. Haroi lezov, a higher ranking official, would be fit to be placed on a golden bed, so he would be assigned that. Omar lo Rabbi Nechemya. So Rabbi Nechemya addresses Rabbi Yehuda and says, Imkain, if you set things up like that, atomatil kino besuda, you're going to create a certain sense of jealousy. People of lower rank are going to be jealous of those that were placed on the more significant type beds. And the kino, jealousy and strife, is certainly not optimal for a successful banquet. Elo, heim shel kesef, vragleim shel zahav. Rather, the psukim describe beds that were made of silver and their legs were made of gold. Pasuk Vav says, Bahat Voshesh, Omar of Asi, Avonim Shemischoitetois al Balehen. This is a reference to some type of, we'll call it, gems that one, the word Bahat, Beis Hei Tes, the hey and the ches can interchange, so you have the word mischoltetos, chof, that's ches tes instead of the hey tes root, and that means that one acquires them only after great exertion, great expenditure of energy. So in order to get them, in order to acquire these expensive stones, one has to put himself out for it. V'chein hu omer, and you have another pasuk that elevates or praises expensive stones, gems. The pasuk says, ki avnei nezer misnoisesois al admosoi, Misnosisos means that through great misyonos, only through great efforts do you acquire these precious stones. What else did he have at the banquet? Vidar v'socheres. This is in Pasuk Vav. Rav Omar Dori Dori. That means the people were set up rows around rows. The word socheres is like the word schar, which means goes around. It seems to be they were set up in rows in a circular fashion. And Shmuel Omar, Evan Toivo Yesh Bekrochei Hayam, some type of precious gem that is found abroad, Vidora Shmo, and its name is Dora, Hoshiva Beemtza Seuda, Umeiro Lohem Kitzorayim. It was a type of luminescent stone that he was able to place it in the middle, and it cast light like the noon time. And the word sochores is associated with the word sihara. Sihara is an expression for the moon, something that illuminates. So that in the first pshat, Rab's pshat took the words dar v'socheres. Dar were rows upon rows, and socheres means around, around. And Shmuel says dar is the name of the stone, and socheres is a loshon, an expression of creating luminescence. Debei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, he has a third approach, shekora dror l'chol ba'alei schora, that he declared a freedom of tax. Dror is freedom. That's dor, freedom from, for all the bale sora, the merchants, freedom from taxes. Pasuk Zayin says, v'hashkois b'klei zohav v'keilim mikelim shonim. So grammatically, it should have been mishunim miboya le. What does kelim shonim mean? Omar Rava, yotza bas kol v'omer lahem. A heavenly voice came forth and announced, Rishonim kolu mipnei kelim. The Rishonim are the earlier ones. That's the successors of Nebuchadnezzar, was Belshazzar and his band. They had taken out the vessels of the Beis Hamikdash and belittled them. V'atem shoinim v'shoisim bohem, and you're doing the same thing. So that the heavenly voice is basically a warning that look what happened to those who disparaged the vessels of the Beis Hamikdash. They brought upon themselves destruction. You're doing the same thing. You're taking them out. Shonim is a second time. V'shoisim, and drinking from them. The pasuk says v'yein malchus rav. This is pasuk Zayin. Omar Rav melamed shekol echod veechod hashishkeu yayin shegodol heimenu b'shonim. The pasuk says the wine of the kingdom Rav. Rav means great. Great here means old, older, great in years. So Rav tells us it means that everyone there was presented wine that was older than he himself was. So if you had a person there was 43 years old, he would get a bottle of wine, 44 years old. V'hashtiyah kedos, that's posuches, my kedos, what does that mean? That their drinking was kedos. Omar Rav Chanan, Mishum Rabbi Meir, kedos shel Torah, like the rule of the Torah, like liquids in the context of the Torah, more specifically in the context of sacrificial offerings. Ma das shel Torah, achilam rubo mishtia, when it came to the offering of sacrifices, so you had an animal, you had a meal offering, so quantity-wise there was more achila, more food substance than the wine that also accompanied sacrifices. That's achila, meruba, is greater than mishtia. Af sudasa shalosa rasha, so too in the meal of that wicked man, Achashverosh, achila, meruba, mishtia, there was more food than there was drink. The pasuk says, "Ein ones." Omar Rav Elazar, "Malamik shekol echad ve'echad hishkeu miyein medinoso." The expression "Ein ones" teaches us that each one was presented wine from his own country. La'asoyz kiritzon ish ve'ish. That's what it says also in pasuk Ches. Omar Rava, La'asois kirtson Mordechai v'Haman. The expression ish v'ish is a hint to two men, Mordechai and Haman, with whom you find in Psukim the word ish. And it's pointed out that they, Haman and Mordechai, were serving as wine butlers at that feast. Mordechai, where do we see him referred to as ish? Dechtif ish Yehudi. And Haman is referred to as ish tsar v'oyev. Two psukim, each one has the word ish in them, one referring to Mordechai and the other to Haman. Gam Vashti Hamalka Osto Mishte Noshim Beis Hamalchus. In Posuk Tes, it says that Vashti also made a feast for the women in Beis Hamalchus. So the Gemara asks, Beis Hanoshim Miboyale. If it's a feast for women, it should have said a feast in the palace of the women. Beis Hanoshim. What is Beis Hamalchus? Omar Rava. Shnehem Lidvar Avero Niskavnu. The use of the word Malchus, the kingdom, with reference to Vashti, parallels Vashti with her husband Ahasuerus, that both of them had the same basic intentions of immorality, of overexposure, if you will. Hainu Damri Inchi, it's in light of this that people say, Ihu Bekori V'itse B'butzini. Kori and Butzini are the same item. It's just that it's a reference to some type of vegetation. In Gemara markings, you've probably heard us say this before, that we generally shy away from offering translations of plants and animals other than those things, those items that we have a clear masora on, a clear tradition on. But for convenience sake, we'll simply say Rashi uses the word duluin. Duluin could be something maybe of a pumpkin or melon nature. So he wants big ones. That's Ihu Bekori V'itse Bebutzini. And she wants small ones. That's kind of a literal translation, but we look at Rashi at the top of Omid Beis, where he says Butzini Duluin Ketanas Klomar Deba'oisa Min Atzmo. It's in the same variety, Zen Noef Vezuno Efes. He was immoral and she was immoral. Hu Omer Laharos Is Yoifya. He wanted to expose her beauty. V'hi Lekach Niskavna Shistak L'Biofya. She was actually interested in appearing undressed, just like he wanted. That Ahasuerus wanted to show off his attractive wife, and she wanted to be seen as well. We'll see more about this later. Bayom Hashvi Ketov Lev HaMelech B'Yayin. It says on the seventh day when he was enjoying his wine. This is Pasuk Yud. Otu Ad Hashta Lo Tov Libei B'Chamra. Notice we dot underlined Bayom Hashvi. But only on the seventh day he was feeling good with his wine. What's the significance of Yom HaShvi over here on the seventh day? He was enjoying wine from the very beginning. So we have a very long answer. A certain amount of the answer you'll see is in brackets, but the answer as far as what is the significance of Yom HaShvi? Omar Rava, Yom HaShvi Shabbos Hoya. Yom HaShvi was really Shabbos, Saturday. She Yisrael Oichlo V'Shoysen. When Yisrael, when Jews eat a Shabbos meal, maschilin b'divrei Torah b'divrei tishbachos, the meal begins with divrei Torah, with words of Torah, with words of praise. In fact, you find even today many people have the custom of saying at the beginning of their meal or during their meal words of Torah concerning the Parsha Shavua, and there are Shabbos Miros. Some people actually begin their meals even before they eat anything. They recite all kinds of passages that usher in the Shabbos meal. So Jews start their meals with Torah and with praise of the Almighty. Aval Oivdei Kechavim. when it comes to idol worshippers, sha'ichlin v'shoisim, when they sit down to a meal, they eat and drink, ein maschil ela b'divrei tiflus. They start their meals with foolishness and profanity. V'chein b'sudasa shel oisei rasha, and likewise with regard to the meal of that wicked man, Achashverosh. And what were they discussing at the meal? They were discussing matters of immorality. The Halolu Omrim, Modayos knows. These would say that the Mead women are beautiful. The Halolu Omrim, Parsoyos knows. And the others would say that the Persian women are beautiful. Omar Lehem Achashverosh. So Achashverosh piped up and said, Kli Shani Mishdamesh Bo, the vessel that I use, a reference to his wife, Enoi Loi Modai Below Parsi Elo Kazdai. She is not a Mead woman, nor is she a Persian woman, but she is from the Kazdians. Kazdians is another expression referring to Babylonians. Ritzain Chem Liroiso, do you want to see her? Omru Lo In. Yes, we do. Uvavachne Aruma, provided she comes unclothed. Notice we have a bracketed section. The note on the side indicates when we've written Segram Elu Einom Ledilug. The purpose of this bracketed section is not for skipping, as is usually the case with our brackets. Elo Laharos de Ad Kan Hadu Siach Ben Achashverosh LeOrchav. It's just to point out that up till now, this is the end of the discourse between Achashverosh and his guests. Within the brackets, there'll be more. There's discussion more on the issue of the nakedness. After the brackets, you can see we pick up with the psukim from the Megillah. So that having been said, we also have a topic heading on the side for this section. Mida keneged mida bekeshul of Vashti. We'll see measure for measure how Vashti was dealt with from divine intervention. Shebemida, we continue in the Gemara. The public wanted her to come out naked. Shebemida she'odah moided bo moidedim lo. The way one treats others, he is in turn treated. Malamed choisavashti harosha meviyah b'nois Yisrael umafshiton arumois ve'oise bohen molocha b'shabbos. Take note, keep an eye on the markings. We learn from what eventually happened to Vashti, this is the way she dealt with others. She would take Jewish girls, she would strip them of their clothing, and force them to do prohibited activities on Shabbos. Melochas are actions, activities that are prohibited on Shabbos. And she would force them in this fashion to violate Shabbos. Lefikach nigzar oleo b'Shabbos. And that's the explanation as to why it was Shabbos that this event took place. Hainu dichtiv, and it's based on this that we see the pasuk in Perek Beis pasuk Aleph, Achar Hadvorim Ho'ele Kishoich Chamas Amelech Achashverosh, and it was after these matters that the wrath of the king subsided. Zohar Es Vashti Vesasher Asasa Vesasher Nigzar Oleha. Now this pasuk means Kishem Shasasa, just like she did. Kach nigzar olah, thusly it was ruled concerning her. And as we said, measure for measure. So, of course, we're talking about the downfall of Vashti, and her downfall was on a Shabbos. And why it was on a Shabbos, it's as we explained till now. She forced Jewish girls to violate the Shabbos, and therefore her downfall was on Shabbos. Vatimoein Hamalko Vashti. The Pasuk says in Perek Aleph Pasuk Yudbeis, the queen Vashti, she resisted. Michti, pritzta havoi. But we just got finished saying that she herself was an immoral type individual. She was a pritzah. So If we just skip the brackets for a moment, the next line, my time elo asoi. Once we established that she was a prutza, she was an immoral type person herself, so why didn't she want to come? Why does the pasuk say vatimoein, that she resisted coming? Let's go back over the reading. We said prutza havoi, the omar mar, as we said before, we have a little arrow on the side indicating you can go back to Amud Aleph and find the corresponding arrow. We said earlier, Shneim Lidvara Veroniskavnu, both of them, Achashverosh and she, Vashti, had immoral intentions. So she was quite happy to come out naked in front of all of the people. Why all of a sudden is she resisting this? So the Gemara is asking, my time will also, why didn't she come? Two approaches. Omer of Yosef Hanina Malamed, Sheporcha Bo Tzoras. From the Psukim, and Rashi explains in greater detail how you see this, but it means that her body broke out with a Tzoras skin affliction. And so to come out with a afflicted skin with Tzoras, where the skin loses its normal skin color, it turns white splotches, so of course she didn't want to come out unclothed. But Masnisa Tana, another approach is, Bo Gavriel vi also lo zonov. The angel Gavriel came and made for her a tail. So she, of course, didn't want to come out exposed. The Pasuk says in Pasuk Yud Beis, Vayiktsoi Famelech Ma'oid Vachamosoi Boaro Boi. He became very angry. Amai Dolko Be Kulehai. Why so angry? Okay, so she resisted coming out, but is that a reason for him to be so enraged? Omar Rava, Sholcha Lei. Rava explains that Vashti sent a message to him, to Achashverosh. And she says, Bar Ahurai Re Diabo, the son of the man, the what's called the Shomer Hasusim, the horse attendant of my father. So Vashti, she was the daughter of the Babylonian, of the previous Babylonian monarch. And as a king, so her father had men who were in charge of his horse stables. Achashverosh is reputed to be the son of one of those horse workers. So she says, the son of my father's horse stable attendants. Abo l'kbal alfa chamro shosi v'lo rovi. Father, she says, Vashti says, my father, in front of 1,000 people, he would drink wine, and he wouldn't become, lo ravi, wouldn't become intoxicated. He was able to hold his wine. Vahu gavra, referring to Achashverosh, you, ishtati b'chamre, you become drunk, you become a fool in your wine drinking. Well, upon hearing that insult, miyad v'chamosoi baro boy, and that's what the pasuk says in his, he became enraged. Vayomer Hamelech lachachomim, and now in his state of rage, he seeks counsel. What am I to do with this rebellious woman? So it says, Vayomer Hamelech lachachomim. The king turned to the wise ones. Man chachomim, who are the chachomim? Rabbonon. Yodei ho'itim. It describes the rabbonon as the ones who are knowledgeable of time. Shiyodin la'abir shonim v'litoy chadoshim. The Rabbanan had the skill of intercalation, of establishing establishing when months are set in and when years are to be extended. Omar lohem, Achashverosh said to them, Dainuha li, I want you to judge her for me. He's turning to them to subject her to a ruling, to a judgment. And if we skip the brackets for a moment, we have actually a note on this side. After the brackets, the Chachamim respond to Achashverosh. Within the brackets, the Chachamim, before they respond to his request, you see their deliberation. They don't know what to do, so to speak. So now that that's clear, we have Achashverosh's request, Dainuli, and then after the brackets, two lines later, It's Omru Lo, they respond to him. But in the interim, they deliberate. So now we go to the brackets. Omru, they said to themselves, Hey Chinatim, what are we going to do? Name Ole Katlo, if we say, well, kill her, she rebelled against you, you're the king, and she rebelled against you, she's subject to death. Well, if we can't say that, Lamocher Posuk Lechamre V'docher Lo Boi Lo Minon. Then tomorrow, if she's killed, the next day when he sobers up, posik lechamrei posik, it stops upon him. Chamrei is the influence of the wine. Chamrei is his wine. He sobers up. He'll remember her, and then boi lo minon, he'll seek her out from us. Oh, can you bring me in my wife? But she's dead, you know. So that's why it'll be a problem if we say kill her. Name all le shafka. If on the other hand we say, well, leave her be, that's an insult to the king. Here you have someone, albeit his wife, but rebelled against him. What do you mean just leave her be? So Omru lo, now the Rabbonan, after being requested, they respond to the king. You note this is a long response. They said, Miyoim Shechora Beis Hamigdash, Vegalinu Me'artzenu, from the time of our temple's destruction and our exile from our land, Nitlo Eitzo Mimenu, we've lost our ability of counsel. We've lost our wisdom. V'einonu Yoidim Lodun Dineinu Nefoshes, and we can't judge capital cases. Zil Legabi Amonu Moyov, go to the people of Ammon and Moab, go to their officials, go to their wise men, the Yasvi Beduchtayu, they were never exiled. They're sitting in their places. Kechamrod Yosef al Durdaya, just like wine sits on its sediment or on its lees. Vetaimo Omru Le, and they are saying something that is true. It makes sense. It has a basis. Dichtiv, the pasuk says regarding Ammon and Moav. It says Sha'anan Moav Minurav V'Shoket Hu El Shmorav. The Moav is pleasant. It is at peace. It's the lohurak mikli al kli ubagolu loholach. It hasn't been cast from one vessel to another. It hasn't been exiled. Al kain omataimo boy v'rechoy lo nomer. It still has its taste and its scent hasn't departed. In other words, here's a people that haven't been cast about in exile. They will be able to offer you counsel. The pasuk says, pasuk yudalid, v'hakorov elov karshino sheisar agmuso tarshish meres marsino memuchan. Omar Rabbi Levi, kol ha-pasuk ze al shum korbonos demar. This entire pasuk has a reference to the sacrifices in the Beis HaMikdash. Before we continue with the Gemara itself, we look at the Rashi in the upper third of the page, posuk zal korbanos nemar v'hakorov elov, the posuk we just read, loshon hakrovas korban. Korov is a hint to the offering of sacrifices. Malachei hashores hiskiru lufnei hakodesh baruch hu es hakorbanos shikrivu yisrael lufanov. The service angels mentioned to the Almighty, or reminded the Almighty, so to speak, of the sacrifices the Jews used to offer. Through Vashti, he'll take vengeance through removing Vashti, and that will enable Esther to be brought in her place. So we have a pasuk, and now you'll see as the Gemara goes on, it ties in the words of this pasuk to the korbanos. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei mivne heading, a topic heading with a structural note, because as we go on in the Gemara, you'll see triangles will appear with the word klum in the triangle. Tainas malachei ashores l'toivas Yisrael. These are claims, arguments of the angels on behalf of the Jewish people. Al smach hashemos shemuskorn b'posuk aleph perik aleph posuk dalid. And we'll tie in these names to sacrifices. So when you look at the pasuk itself on its translation level, so it's a reference to those officials by name who were close to Ahasuerus. However, we're giving a deeper explanation, the Gemara explanation, to all of the names. So we're saying that this pasuk it represents the intervention of the Malochim on behalf of Klal Yisrael in order to get the ball rolling, get Vashti out of the picture, enabling Esther to move in. So how did the service angels, how did the Malachi Ashores arouse the compassion of the Almighty? By mentioning the korbanos that the Jews used to offer. Omer Rabbi Levi, kol pasuk zal shum korbanos nemar. Karshina, omru malachi ashoris lefnei kodesh baruch hu ribono shel olam. Klum hikrivu lefanecha korim b'nei shona kederech shehikrivu Yisrael lefanecha. Did these people offer to you? The word karshina is an abbreviation of korim or sheep. B'nei Shona, Kar, Chof Reish, or the sheep. Shin Nun Aleph is a reference to Shona. It's a reference to sheep, a year-old sheep. Did they offer to you sacrifices like the Jewish people? Sheisar, also in the Pasuk. Klum Hikrivu Lefonecho Shtei Torim. Look at the word Sheisar, you can see it's also abbreviated. Shtei Torim is another type of sacrifice. Two turtle doves. Torin are the type of bird that is fit for offering as a sacrifice. Admisa, klum bonu lefonecho mizbeach adoma. Did they erect for you an altar made of earth? Certainly not. Only the Jews did that. Tarshish, klum shimshu lefonecho bevigdei kuna dechtivu tarshish v'shoem v'yoshvei. Did they serve you with the priestly clothing, amongst which you had Tarshish, which was one of the stones that figured in the Big Day Kohen Gadol? So the word Tarshish is a hint to that, to the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. Meres, also in Pasuk Yud Dalid, Klum Mirsu Bedam Lefonecha, did they stir the blood that we do after a sacrifice is slaughtered, so as to keep it from coagulating before it is sprinkled on the Mizbeach, so it's stirred. The word meres has to do with memares, is stirring. Marsana, also a similar word. Klum mirsu b'menachos lefanecha. Did they prepare meal offerings that involve the stirring, the mixing of the oil with the flour? Again, mirsu is meres, moras has to do with stirring or mixing together. So did they do any of these things? Memuchan, klum hechinu shulchan lefanecha. Did they prepare for you, like the Jews did, a table that had showbreads on it? So up till this point, then, what we've done is we've taken the names in Pasuk Yud Dalid and demonstrated how each one of those names is an allusion to some aspect of the sacrificial service in the Beis HaMikdash. Vayomer Memuchan. Tana, we have a tradition that Memuchan ze Homan. V'loma nikro shmoi Memuchan. If his name is Homan, why is he called Memuchan? Shemuchan lepuranus. He is set up for punishment, eventually for being hung. So he's there, his destiny is one of puranas, of punishment. Omar of Kahana, Mikan, from the psukim that we see here, She'ahedyoid koifetz borosh, that the minor one, that the hedyot in this case would mean the least one, is also one that at times jumps to the beginning. In other words, a person who recognizes that he's maybe he doesn't recognize, but he's the least of the officials, he speaks up first. And in other words, very much out of place. Now, just a little more explanation here is that in Pasuk Yud Dalid, he is mentioned at the end of the list of names. And then we find in Pasuk Tezayin, Vayomer Memuchan, he's the first one to speak up. So even though he's the least of the group, of the officials that were featured in Pasuk Yud Dalid, he is the first one to speak up. That's Hedyot Kofetz Barosh. I at times like to look at the word Hedyot, and phonetically it very much reminds you of the word idiot, idiot. And the idea here is that very well taken, that many times you have people that are of that nature that they think they're great, they think they're hot stuff, and they jump to speak out first. The Pasuk says in Pasuk Chof Beis, Liyos Kol Ish So Rare Beveisoi. The Achashverosh had sent a message after Vashti rebelled against him. He sent letters, a royal edict that announces every man shall be a minister, shall be a king in his house. That each man shall be the head of his household and rule as a leader in his house. Omar Rava, Ilmoli Yigrois Rishonos. If not for these first epistles that were sent out by the king, indicating that a man should lead in his house, and for people to receive letters like that, and I don't know about right now as you're listening to this recording, but certainly for thousands of years, it was very clear that the man was the head of his household. That was a simple given. Everyone lived like that. What do you need to have a king sending you letters that a man is supposed to be a king in his house, the leader, the head of his house? That's obvious. This king must be a fool. So if not for these first letters that established Ahasuerus as being a kind of a fool in the population's eyes, then lo nishtayer misenim shiyisrael. Again, the expression "senim shiyisrael" is a euphemism. It means the Jewish people themselves. There would be no one left of the Jewish people. Let's read that again. Lo nishtayer misenim shiyisrael. Sorry to pull it. No remnant or refugee would be left from the Jewish people. Why? Because when the next letters came as a result of Haman's ascent to power, indicating the destruction of the Jews, they wouldn't have waited till his date. They would have hurried to fulfill the royal request. However, they see that this king isn't really someone to really rely on. He's kind of a fool, so they weren't so quick to act on his subsequent issue or subsequent ruling concerning the Jews. Amri. They said, the people said, "Man ha, my hai, the shodir lon liyos kol ish sorav aveso." What is it that he's sending that we should be heads of our households? Pshita, afilu korcha bevese pardashcha lehave. It's such a well-known thing that even a korcha, now there are different pshat than what a korcha is. Rashi says it's a weaver. A weaver at that time was known as a very lowly profession. The Marsha says korcha means someone who's a lowly person. Even the least of men, but in their own houses, pardashcha, they are leaders. It's everyone knows that. It's so obvious. So, since at the outset he established, Achashverosh established himself as somewhat of some type of fool, so they weren't so quick to act on his subsequent ruling that indicated the destruction to destroy the Jewish people. Vayafked Hamelech Pekidim, Posuk Gimel of Perek Beis. Omar Rav, Mai Dichtiv, Kol Orum Yase Bedas Uksil Yifros Iveles. What does that Posuk mean? This is a Posuk from Mishle, Perek Yud Gimel Posuk Tezayin, Kol Orum Yase Bedas Ze David. Now, before we go on, we should just give a word of background. Posuk Gimel of Perek Beis. This is a point at which Achashverosh is interested in seeking out a replacement for Vashti. So he sends out emissaries throughout his kingdom to seek out a desirable replacement, desirable mate, a beautiful girl. So the Pasuk says that he sent out, the king charged his different agents for that task. So now, with that in mind, with that background, we have a Pasuk in Mishle, which read, Kol Orum Yase Bedas Uksil Yifrois Iveles. Kol Orum Yase Bedas, said David, this is a reference to David. The word Orum means cunning. It also means wise. This is a reference to David. David also had reached a point that concerning him, he needed to seek out a female companion. And it says in the context of David, they were seeking out for David a particular maiden that would keep company with David. So David sought out initially one girl. Well, kol man dahave le barta, any man that had a daughter, I saw nihale. He would present his daughter as a possible candidate for that role of being with the king. It was a great honor to any man that his daughter would be chosen to be with the king, King David. Uksil yifrois iveles, zeh hashverosh, the ksil is a fool. Dichtiv vayafkein hamelech pekidim. Now, just an additional word of explanation that you don't see in the words of the Gemara itself. As opposed to David, who sought out one girl, Ahasuerus sent out agents to get for him women. It's true that he might have chosen from amongst them one, but that's not what was indicated. It was indicated that his emissaries would gather in many women, hordes of women, and Rashi explains this. He says, yeah, that once hordes of women would be gathered in, the king would conduct intimacy with each one of the women, and only afterwards he would choose someone from amongst them. But any father wouldn't want his girl subjected to that if it's one girl that's going to be chosen. So then every father thought that maybe his girl would be the one that's chosen. But when it's a function of gathering in large groups of girls, concerning whom, as Rashi says, the king would conduct intimacy and then choose. So, as the Gemara goes on to say, kol man dahave le barta, anyone who had a daughter, itmara mine, he would hide her from him. The pasuk says, "Ish Yehudi hoya b'shushan habira u'shmoi Mordechai ben Yoyer ben Shimi ben Kish, Ish Yemini." My ka'omar. What is the point of this pasuk? E liyachusa ka'asi. If the purpose of this pasuk is to give the background, the genealogy of Mordechai, lechse v'lezel ad Binyamin. Why not state his genealogy back to Binyamin, the tribe from which Mordechai comes? Maishno hani tlosa. What's the significance of citing these three? So we read in the pasuk was Ben Yoyer, Ben Shimi, Ben Kish. They're three names. What's the significance? So the Gemara says Tana kulan al shmoi nikru. The names cited here are not names for the purpose of genealogy purposes, but rather they are descriptive words of Mordechai himself. Ben Yoir, he's called Ben Yoir. Ben Sheheir einayim shel Yisrael betfiloso. Heir is to enlighten, to bring light to one's eyes. He lightened the eyes of Israel through his prayers. Ben Shimi, Ben Sheshoma el Tfiloso, the one whose prayers were heard. Ben Kish, Shehikish al Sharei Rachamim v'niftuchulo. It was Mordechai that Hikish, as he knocked on the gates of mercy, and those gates were opened. Kori le Yehudi, he's called in the Pasuk Ish Yehudi, Almom Yehuda Kasi, that would indicate he's from the tribe of Yehuda. For Kori le Yemini, and he's also referred to by that word. Ish Yemini, it said in the Pasuk. Almo, the word Yemini, Almom Binyamin Kasi, that would indicate he comes from the tribe of Binyamin. But one person can't come from two tribes. So in order to explain this, the Gemara presents a number of approaches. On the side, under our Nosei Mivneh heading, the topic note and with structural note, the volcano shape that you see, one of our series markings, is a Sidra Shel Hesberim. It's a series of explanations, Liyashev, to resolve Hodichtiv Ishiu Di Ishimini, the Mashma Shemorachai Mi Yehuda Mi Binyamin. We have to attempt to resolve this. So we continue in the Gemara. Amar Rav Nachman, Mordechai Muchtar Benimuso Hoya. This line is subject to different interpretations, different girsos in this Gemara as well. We're going to use just one of the different shotim. The translation is Muchtar Benimuso Hoya, means that he was crowned with beautiful names. What does that really mean? So one of the pshatim is that the pasuk describes the different niceties of Mordechai, and in addition to that, he had leadership talents. And as a result of leadership talents, leadership is associated with royalty, with rulership, malchus. So in that context, he is referred to by the term Yehudi, which is from Yehuda. Not that he was actually from Yehuda, but that he had kingly attributes, and true monarchy does come from the tribe of Yehuda. Malchus Beis David, Yehuda, David HaMelech came from Yehuda. And as such, Mordechai, having royal leadership talents, was associated with the tribe of Yehuda, not actually being from there, but having the attributes of royalty that comes from Yehuda. Omar Rabo Babrachana, Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Oviv mi Binyamin, v'imo mi Yehuda, a simple resolution why he is referred to as coming from two tribes is because in reality his father was from Binyamin, but his mother was from the tribe of Yehuda. In general, it should be just for the record, in general, one's tribal association is through one's father. But at times, you can see that the background of one's mother is also referred to, and that's the case here. V'rabbonan amri mishpachos miskaros zu bezu. Families were competing with one another. Mishpachas Yehuda umeres, the people of Yehuda would say, ano gorim caused. Gorim is to cause. Ano gorim to misyalid Mordechai. I caused Mordechai's birth. How is that? The lokatle David leShimi ben Gera. Shimi ben Gera was a predecessor, an ancestor of Mordechai. David was King David, who came from Yehuda. So the fact that David, who came from Yehuda, did not kill Shimi ben Gera, who actually was an individual, was subject to a death penalty, but David spared him, and that sparing of him enabled Mordechai many generations later to be born. So David, who came from Yehuda, is responsible for Mordechai's ultimate or eventual birth. Umishmachas Binyamin Omra Minoi Kosi, and the tribe of Binyamin claimed, well, he is a direct descendant from us. So you have this sense of competition of Yehuda versus Binyamin, trying to take credit for Mordechai's existence. Rova Omar Knesses Yisrael Omra Leidoch Gisa. Rava also deals with the names Yehuda and Binyamin, but from an opposite vantage point. And that is, the Jewish people were crying out in anguish, not in praise. And it is explained as follows. Ru'u ma osa li Yehudi u'ma shilem li yamini. Behold, see what the person from Yehuda did, and what I suffered, what I was paid with by the Benjaminite. And that's now explained. Ma osa li Yehuda, what's the anguish that Yehuda, that Masali Yehudi, what did Yehuda cause? What anguish did he bring upon us? And we continue at the top of Yud Gimel, Daf Yud Gimel. The Lokatle David Lishimi. David, who came from Yehuda, he didn't kill Shimei, who was Chayev Misa, Disyalid Minei, Mordechai, the Mikni, Bei Haman, that born forth from Shimei, eventually was Mordechai, who was the source of the wrath of Haman. So Yehuda, namely through David, caused Mordechai to come about, who upset us, says Klal Yisrael. In other words, if Mordechai wouldn't have come around, so Haman wouldn't have been enraged, says Knesset Yisrael, we would have been spared of all the anguish. Uma shile yamini the lokatle Shaul laAgag. Shaul was a descendant of King Saul. He was a descendant of the tribe of Binyamin, and in his day he didn't kill the Amalekite monarch whose name was Agog. And the Yalid Minei, Haman de Mitzayer Lisrael, a descendant of that Amaleki king, was Haman, who brought pain and suffering upon the Jewish people. So, whether it be from Yehuda or Binyamin, Knesset Yisrael looks at both of them as being the source of their anguish. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Li'oilom mi Binyamin Ka'asi. He is really from Binyamin. That is, Mordechai comes from Binyamin. V'amai kori le Yehudi. Why the term Yehudi? Not that because he came from the tribe of Yehuda, but al shum shekofar b'avodah zarah. It is because he, Mordechai, denied idolatry. Shekol ha'kofar b'avodah zarah nikri Yehudi. Anyone who challenges, who denies, who contradicts idolatry is called by the word Yehudi. Kidichtiv, as the Pasuk says, Isi Guvrin Yehudoyin Le'elohoch Lo Palchin. It says, a Pasuk in Daniel mentions the word Yehudoyin, and those described as Yehudon are Le'elohoch, to your gods, Lo Palchin, they do not serve. So you see that the term Yehudi is one who denies idolatry. Now, we saw a new marking, but the new marking will have more significance in Mitzvah Shem in our next shiur. But we're touching on a topic. It's essentially going to become a side point in the Gemara, but it is on the side of the Gemara. We have Kol HaKofar B'Avodah Zarah Nikra Yehudi. He who denounces and denies idolatry is termed Yehudi. And under the Mivneh heading, you see the bow tie shape, Yehudi. And the dashed underline that we already saw is Al Shum Shekofer B'Avodah Zarah. Sterech Simunim Elu, through these markings, Ni'ureh Kesher Bein Shnei Haktoyim Shebegomor. We'll be able to see a connection between this and the next piece of Gemara that appears in brackets. The brackets themselves are not really for skipping purposes, but it's simply to define the boundaries of the Gemara, the length of the Gemara that darshins a posuk in Divrei Hayomim regarding Kolev and Bas Paro. After the bracketed section, you can see we pick up again with the continuation of the psukim in Megillas Esther. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, especially in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.